Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We take a comprehensive look at the Israeli-Lebanon war in the contexts of pre-war planning, human rights violations or war crimes, and the ongoing crisis for civilians in the region over the next three Talk Nation Radio programs. We start with an interview with Matthew Kalman. He's based in Israel. The reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle wrote on July 21st that Israel set its war plan for Lebanon more than a year ago. Then we speak with Sam Husseini. He managed to engage Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Daniel Ayalon, outside of Fox. We hear portions of their discussion and interview Sam Husseini of the Institute for Public Accuracy, a consortium of policy analysts. We contacted Matthew Kalman in Israel on July 25th, and I asked him first to talk about his sources and the chronology of events as he outlined them.
Well, time will tell whether or not I'm right. I spoke to people in the IDF, I spoke to analysts, I spoke to diplomats, I spoke to people in military intelligence, formerly in military intelligence, so people around the area of this who might know. And I pieced together what I thought was an accurate picture based on what they told me.
You say this was the war Israel was most prepared for since the year 1948. This, according to a professor of political science you spoke with?
I quote Gerald Steinberg of Bar-Ilan University, who's a very well-informed guy about these things. He believes that this is the war that Israel has been most prepared for since 1948.
And you speak about PowerPoint presentations to Americans and others?
Yes, and I see that's actually been misquoted. This story, for some reason, has got a lot of traction on the web in the last few days. And I see that somebody's taken that and turned that into a PowerPoint presentation to Washington think tanks, which I didn't say, and I don't believe happened. It all happened here in Israel. And it seems to me that what was going on here was that Israel has been trying to signal for some time that the buildup of missiles and other heavy weaponry by the Hezbollah aimed at Israel is a serious problem, because at some point the Hezbollah, we're going to use them against Israel. And it seems to me that the reason that the army actually started laying out its plans in this way was trying to get a message across, both to the international community and indirectly to Hezbollah themselves, as a kind of deterrence, saying, look, don't think about starting to use those weapons, because the next time rockets fall on the north of Israel, we're going to respond in this way and not in the limited way that we've responded in the past. So I think they were trying to send some kind of deterrent warning to Hezbollah and to the international community. And that's why they kind of came out into the open with these plans.
And then leaders of the Israeli Defense Force and some of the hardliners in Israel, we've heard from Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, Shimon Peres. What caused them to put this in the context of the war on terror and then move so quickly and with so much force?
Well, I'm going to unravel your question, because to put Netanyahu, Olmert, and Peres in the same basket and call them all hardliners is not an accurate description of Israeli politics and not an accurate description of those people. Shimon Peres is the ultimate Israeli dove. And the fact that he is standing four square behind this current military operation shows you just how wide the consensus is in Israel about the need for this current military response against Hezbollah. It's not a response by the hardliners. It's a response by the overwhelming majority of Israelis and Israeli politicians and Israeli society. And the reason for that is that there is a belief in Israel, which now appears to be shared by most of the Western world, that Hezbollah is acting as an agent, in effect, of Iranian expansionism, and that the Hezbollah represents an attempt by the Iranian regime to establish its influence in Lebanon and to extend that influence over the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, which it's been doing now for several years. We know that Hezbollah has been financing operations by certain Palestinian militant groups. We know that Hezbollah has been training Palestinian militant groups in the use of bombs and other weaponry. We know that Hezbollah operatives have been captured as they try to enter the occupied territories or Israel, and they have been sent by Hezbollah in order to beef up the training of certain of the Palestinian militant groups. And this reaction that we're now seeing is not a knee-jerk reaction. It's a long-term strategic response to the extension of Iranian influence in this area, when what stands behind the Iranian policy at this moment is a genuine desire to wipe the state of Israel off the map.
Why didn't the Israelis work more with the international community to try to disarm Hezbollah instead of waiting for this incident at the border and then attacking with such force?
The Israelis did work with the international community. For the last 6 years, the Israelis have been warning the international community again and again and again about the buildup of weapons going on in Lebanon. They have been sharing their intelligence on that with anyone who would listen, including journalists. But the problem, both with diplomacy and with journalism, is that until the stuff explodes, you're not really interested in it. No one's really interested in a potential threat. And I know from my own experience that having learnt about the story and gone and studied the story and then offering it to my own editors at various newspapers where I've been writing over the last several years, nobody's particularly interested, because when things are quiet, it's not a story. It's not the case to say that Israel has kept this secret to themselves and suddenly burst out with it. On the contrary, the kind of PowerPoint presentations and briefings that I refer to in my piece in the San Francisco Chronicle last Friday were actually part of that effort to work with the international community, because there were foreign diplomats in those briefings. And the Israelis were saying, look, guys, we are so worried about the buildup of ballistic missiles. That's what Hezbollah have. They have ballistic missiles in Lebanon, that next time they attack us, we are going to go in and destroy them, because someone's got to rein these people in. We'd like it to be the Lebanese government. Failing that, we'd like it to be the Syrians. Failing that, we'd like it to be the international community. But if nobody's going to do anything about it, then we're just going to have to do it ourselves.
You write that Israeli army spokesperson Miri Regev told you they knew about Hezbollah's weapons and that there were pinpoint ground operations to try to locate them and destroy their infrastructure from where they could fire at civilians. But right now, they seem to be bombing the civilian infrastructure of Lebanon. There are many civilians dying, houses being destroyed, apartment complexes. So are you saying that all of these sites were carefully selected targets?
I have no idea. All I know, speaking to the military experts here, is that they are absolutely united in their opinion that the best way to destroy a missile battery is to find the missile battery, if you can, using various intelligence, aerial photographs, whatever you have, then say to the people who have that missile battery, okay, we'd like you, we know where it is, we want you to dismantle that, or failing that, if they refuse to do it, to target it with a laser-guided bomb. And the Israeli bombs are extremely accurate when they want to be. But what the Israelis do is they first actually warn the people who live in those areas to clear out, because it's reached the stage where they feel that's what they've got to do. Many of those missile batteries are actually in people's houses. They're on the top of apartment blocks. I watched a report from Tyre yesterday on I think it was Sky News, where the reporter said, well, this is the first time that they've, I think it was Tyre, This is the first time that there's been an attack on a building in the middle of Tyre. It destroyed that particular building. It didn't destroy any of the buildings around it. There wasn't anybody in that building at the time, but they won't let us go inside. There's an example of a pinpoint strike on a building used by Hezbollah in the middle of a civilian area. My only conclusion from the fact that they wouldn't let the reporters go inside is because that was exactly what the Israelis said it was. It was a missile battery hidden inside a civilian building in the middle of Tyre.
So what you're saying is that there was pre-planning or advanced planning for the war we're seeing now in Lebanon, a lot of damage being done in Lebanese cities and towns.
There was pre-planning done. This is not a knee-jerk reaction. And the pre-planning is based on what the Israelis say is extremely good intelligence, telling them where those long-range missiles are. And what they are trying to do is to destroy them. And the problem that they have is that a lot of those missiles operate from inside people's houses, inside residential areas. Jan Engelhard, the UN Human Rights Commissioner, said yesterday he denounced the Hezbollah as cowards because of the fact that they operate out of the middle of civilian areas and endanger all the civilians around them. That's why Israel, before bombing anywhere, has been dropping all these leaflets warning people to get out of very specific areas, because they know that that's exactly where those missiles are. And since Hezbollah won't decommission them, and since the international community won't take any action against them, the Israelis feel, rightly or wrongly, that the only way to remove the threat of having missiles directed at their cities is to go in and destroy them from the air, and that's what they're doing.
So where is all of this going now? Who is winning the propaganda war?
I have no idea who's winning the propaganda war, because it's not something that I've studied. It's not clear where it's going. One of the places where it is going is that Israel appears to have been given a free hand, at least for the next week or so, by the West, by the Europeans, by the Americans, basically to carry on what they're doing at the moment, which is to try and degrade the military capability of Hezbollah. And it seems to me that Western diplomats, led by the United States, but with the active involvement of Europe now, have taken a very conscious decision to allow Israel to act against Hezbollah, because they share Israel's view that Hezbollah represents an attempt by the Iranians to extend their influence to the Mediterranean and to provide Hezbollah with these lethal weapons in massive quantities, which nobody wants to see in the hands of an extra-legal terrorist organization.
Well, we heard a lot about a possible U.S. or Israeli attack on Iran. Do you think that has influenced any of Iran's thinking?
I think what we might be seeing at the moment is a poker game where one of the sides has blinked. That poker game moved from the standoff over the Iranian nuclear program to the standoff over Hezbollah. And Hezbollah thought that they could keep pushing the Israelis, and that would somehow show that the West was not going to act against Iranian expansionism. And what the Israelis are now doing is they are spearheading an attempt to cut back Iranian expansionism, and that may well have ramifications for the way that the West is going to act in the future against the Iranian nuclear program. Whether that means a military strike at all, whether that means, and who's going to carry it out, I don't know. But I think what we're seeing is a war by proxy, which is in effect a containment of Iranian expansionism in the Middle East.
So if the Israelis were considering an attack on Iran, or perhaps other countries like Syria, if that were a consideration and the U.S. were participating as an ally, then wiping out Hezbollah first might be something that military minds might entertain?
That's certainly one theory.
Matthew Kalman, thank you for joining us from Israel.
Thank you, Dara.
Matthew Kalman writes for the San Francisco Chronicle from Israel. We spoke with him July 25th. Almost a month later, we see a fragile ceasefire in Lebanon as the damage is being assessed. Joining us next is Sam Husseini of the Institute for Public Accuracy. He approached Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Daniel Ayalon, outside of the studios of Fox Network to ask the ambassador about Israel's use of cluster bombs and other charges made by Human Rights Watch, a group that has been monitoring the Israeli-Lebanon war and now says both sides committed war crimes. Sam Husseini, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you much.
The way that this has been folded into the war on terror, people do see it as perhaps, you know, based on actions taken by Hezbollah at the start. But there's the larger strategy that was outlined by, well, in the Project for a New American Century, and then really spelled out in some letters that Jim Loeb outlined on June 13th, 2006, kind of reminding readers about the fact that the Project for a New American Century authors had sent letters just 9 days after the 9/11 attacks. And in those, they called for waging a broader, more ambitious war on terrorism. And according to Loeb, that would include, and I'm quoting here, cutting off the Palestinian Authority under Yasser Arafat, taking on Hezbollah, threatening Syria and Iran, and most importantly, ousting Hussein, regardless of his relationship to the 9/11 attacks or Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I think that we've seen a general pattern of using terrorism as a pretext in order to achieve political purposes. You know, I've seen a lot of people try to link Hezbollah to Al-Qaeda, pretend that they're the same kind of thing. They're not at all. Hezbollah is a Lebanese indigenous group that provides social services that's largely responsible for driving the Israeli occupation out of Lebanon. Israel illegally occupied Lebanon for 18 years. In response to that, Hezbollah was formed and as a militia, a local militia, and basically forced Israel out, the vast majority of the territory that it was occupying, and has acted with, you know, a good deal of restraint up until now. I certainly have my problems with Hezbollah. For example, they are lobbing missiles, small missiles, the missiles that are killing civilians into northern Israel. They're killing more soldiers, more Israeli soldiers, than they're killing Israeli civilians, which is far more than Israel can say. The vast majority of the hundreds upon hundreds of Lebanese that Israel has killed have been civilians. Still, there is this portrayal of Hezbollah as, you know, something like Al-Qaeda that just goes around specifically targeting civilians in a mass way. That's not accurate. That's not what Hezbollah is, and that's part of the reason that Hezbollah has a fair amount of popularity in the region.
Let's turn to your discussion with Israeli Ambassador Daniel Ayalon, where you asked him about Human Rights Watch and their report charging Israel with indiscriminate attacks that killed many civilians in Lebanon.
I wouldn't give too much credence to this Human Watch. I would say this report that you quoted is just something out of this earth. I mean, I don't know where they live. It's a
they have people in Lebanon.
They have. I don't know who they have. We are also in Lebanon. And if you see the difference is, you see that the Hezbollah targets civilians and only civilians. They use these indiscriminate Katyusha rockets, which have been converted, their warheads has been converted into a terror weapon with all these ball bearings, just to kill civilians. Now, they use it from apartments, they use it from mosques, and from schoolyards. On the other hand, we are using only precision munitions, even at the compromise of achieving our mission fast. Many of our soldiers get killed because we are being very careful. So this report, I don't know what credence, it's absurd and it's totally false. And I must say, I will question the motivations of them and who wrote it.
You two went back and forth. He had a microphone, you didn't. That Human Rights Watch, you argue, was in Lebanon gathering information for its report, and you also argue that they are, in fact, an internationally respected monitoring organization. Just comment briefly on what else he said, and then we'll listen to some more excerpts from this tape discussion.
He claimed that Israel was not
targeting civilians. He dismissed the Human Rights Watch report. He asked what planet they were from. He was just, you know, generally very dismissive and not really wanting to engage the evidence. He even brazenly lied, claiming that Israel wasn't using cluster bombs, when Israel has in fact tacitly admitted that it is using cluster bombs, as quoted in the sort of back pages of the New York Times. But once he's put in front of a TV camera, the Israeli ambassador lies and claims that Israel isn't using cluster bombs. So I think that he's extremely disingenuous. I think it's a good opportunity to try to confront these people, the war makers, on a regular basis, since I think wars, as we've seen, have sort of gone hand in hand with massive propaganda efforts and fabrications and lies, and I think it's crucial to confront that as immediate a fashion as possible, and that's what I tried to do.
And here once again, Sam Husseini confronting Israeli Ambassador Daniel Ayalon on August 6th.
Well, it's not very respected to me anymore if they come up with such ignorant remarks which do not represent the truth, and they don't know what's going on if they write these things. The fact that it's written over there doesn't make it true. I think reality on the ground speaks for itself, and the reality on the ground is that they target civilians and we target Hezbollah. The fact that Hezbollah is embedded among Lebanese civilians is a problem, but go ask the Lebanese about it. Our aim is to cut off supply of these deadly weapons from Iran and Syria to the Hezbollah. This is, by the way, specifically what the UN resolution calls for, an arms embargo. And somebody has to do it. We prefer that it will be an international force who will do it. But until they are installed in place, we have to do it to protect ourselves and ultimately to save the Lebanese from the Hezbollah and bring Lebanon back to the Lebanese. They fight these ball bearings, these shrapnels, and this is what happens when you use weapons of terror, as they have been specifically using.
Are you using cluster bombs in Lebanon?
No, we're not. We're not using anything which is not approved by the UN conventions and charters.
Yeah, you know, again, it's incredible that he can talk about, you know, doing things for the good of the Lebanese people while he's bombing the infrastructure that Lebanese people depend on. You can't go around bombing bridges and roads so that people can't be getting necessities of life because you're alleging that somebody might use that bridge to parlay arms. Distinguish civilian infrastructure. These are just basic rules of war. You know, as dubious as that concept is, he keeps appealing to what the Lebanese people, doing things for Lebanese, good of the Lebanese people. Lebanese people are overwhelmingly, obviously, against the Israeli attack and are even largely supporting Hezbollah. Full polls in Lebanon are showing, you know, somewhere around 87% of the Lebanese public, so that includes Christians and Sunnis as well as Shiites, are supporting Hezbollah. So I don't know where he gets off saying that he's doing this for the good of the Lebanese people. The ambassador is coming before us saying, don't believe Human Rights Watch, they're lying. This is all part of a pattern. Israel, for example, before it bombed dozens of civilians in Khana, it took out the nearby UN facility. That indicates a pattern. That indicates that Israel is knocking out the UN facility because the UN facility would be able to monitor their bombing of civilians in the nearby town of Khana, for example. UN repeatedly told Israel that they were there, and Israel ignored that. And through other observations, Human Rights Watch, which has people on the ground, saying that Israel appears to be targeting civilians. Not only that, they also found that they didn't find any instances of Hezbollah, you know, firing rockets from towns and villages and then running away. So that you know, that's sort of Israel's pretext for bombing towns and villages. That they're saying that that's where Hezbollah is firing its rockets. Human Rights Watch didn't find any evidence of that. These are empirical questions, and you know, you try to get your information from as objective a source as possible, and that obviously isn't the Israeli government in this case, especially since you can tell that they're lying because they're contradicting themselves in the use of cluster bombs, saying that they are using it sometimes, and then when they get in front of the TV cameras, lying about it. So you know that they're lying, and you know that they're a bad source and a major protagonist.
It seems almost as if the rhetoric was completely broken down when he was off script and not in a setting that he had control of, like in a newsroom at Fox.
Yeah, I think he was taken a bit aback by the fact that, you know, I was asking some tough questions, and some of the other reporters, perhaps encouraged by my own questioning, asked some, you know, tougher than usual questions. The Israeli government, the U.S. government, have such a massive edifice and such massive resources, but it's all sort of based on lies. And that's why I think it's really crucial that there be very active independent media that goes and confronts them with as best facts as we can assemble. I should note, I didn't go there intending to question the Israeli ambassador primarily. I primarily went there because Stephen Hadley was on that same program. As it turned out, Stephen Hadley was getting beamed in on the satellite, so he didn't have to physically leave the building. But the Israeli ambassador was also there, as was Newt Gingrich, and they both left the building physically. And so I was able to question them. And I think that what needs to happen is that what we call independent or alternative media, as well as international media, because the U.S. mainstream media does it so rarely, need to ask tough questions of these officials by going to either these stakeouts or trying to get into the regular daily news conferences at the White House, at the Pentagon, at the State Department, at the so-called Justice Department. I think we desperately need an organized, effective structure of doing the hard work of, you know, trying to line up our facts as best we can and getting sources that are difficult for them to dismiss, and then be asking them the tough questions on a day-in, day-out basis, and then reporting those lies as best we can in a real-time basis. I think that that's sort of a major task before us.
Sam Husseini of the Institute for Public Accuracy. In our next half-hour segment on the Israel-Lebanon war, we will be joined by Lucy Mayer, a Jerusalem-based researcher in the Middle East and North Africa division of Human Rights Watch. She monitored what was happening in Israel, and Fred Abrahams, a senior emergency researcher at Human Rights Watch.
The indiscriminate nature of the attacks, pattern of a failure to distinguish between combatants and civilians in the IDF's reply, and that those are the matters of concern for us.
The cluster munitions that Israel had asked the U.S. to speed a delivery of, it was reported in Friday's New York Times, these have been tested to have a dud rate of between 5 and 23%. So that means out of one shell, you have hundreds of submunitions, and then 5 to 23% of those do not explode on impact, and they are scattered throughout these areas, and they literally create a landmine so that when civilians do return to the area, they are walking into areas which are very unsafe.
You can listen to the entire discussion between Sam Husseini and Ambassador Ayalon online at Husseini.org, Husseini.org. And you can find the report by Human Rights Watch, Fatal Strikes, online at HRW.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS, Radio for the People, at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, links, and discussions.